This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Now what I want you all to do is just put your hands together. Join with me as I sing. I want you to know that somehow, some way, we've got to get together. We've got to stop the madness. Let me tell you what I'm talking about.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Thanks for joining me. Lots happening out there in the world of politics and whatever, you know. One of the things, actually there's so much that caught my eye, and we've actually been talking about a lot of it, but a couple things. The Election Commission is actually going to be hearing some of this, behavior that went on in the elections, and we'll talk about some of that, and we'll talk about the PLDC, the Public Land Development Corporation, and some interesting things have developed that should have, actually there shouldn't have been anything developing. These things should never have had to take place. For example, the governor offers to postpone the agency's, the PLDC's rules, when in fact, that was one of those comments that he had offered to the public. His administration wants to fully take into consideration the public testimony about the PLDC. The governor, Neil Abercrombie, is absolutely, I'd say we should call him by now the magician. He wants to build the tallest building there at Kakaako. He wants to quickly give land back to OHA and everyone else, as we've discussed. And he now at a point where he wants to stop and consider the public's comments. Well, why don't you postpone the transfer of the lands? Why are you displacing the health department, which we rely on to enforce and regulate and monitor sewage and all of those things? Yet he's still moving forward in dismantling what is in place, and yet he now at the point at the crossroads to say we want to consider the public's input, while you know on this show we've disclosed where he in fact hid the postponement and suspension of all environmental laws of the state. So don't fall for magic man's quick of hands with this act. And I don't know if William Isler is a rabbit in the hat or the bird in the cage or whatever it is that William Isler, what the role is. But I'd say enough already. He is part of the problem. Whatever Neil Abercrombie is putting up on us and pulling over the wool over our eyes, I notice William Isler is eager to stand up there and, yes, sir, boss, and enough already. This is bad business. The PLDC, the manner in which the governor is approaching it. So one of the tricks, typical of a magician, show you something and it's an illusion. And you walk away knowing that it's nonsense, but what are you going to do? You paid your money and you wanted entertainment. Well, we're not being entertained, but we will be paying money here. And that is, take for example, he wishes to exceed the height limits in some of these instances of condominiums and buildings. So what does he do? He decides, say, well, in postponing the rules, we might also compromise and build shorter buildings, or they're not as going to be as tall, we'll compromise. So you see the slip of hands there, that in fact, originally people didn't want the construction and the development in that area. They wanted to save it for the public and leave it be. Well, now they're agreeing, not the public, but the governor is considering not making the building as tall. So you see what he's done is basically made some outrageous offer in the initial stand And now he's willing to compromise. So he gets what he wants, or his friends gets what they want. And you and I are stuck. And where are we going to go? I spoke about this a little bit, alluding to it. And here's some of the concerns I have. The population of the people are growing. The recreational areas are diminishing, and they're being used more frequently. And so the impact, and I talked about carrying capacity, where are these people going? I foresee in the near future that at the current pace and how we're going, there's going to be limited, and not to mention the sale of state lands. You don't see any enhancement and any increase of park spaces or public use areas. And so while he's suspending these rules so far, or as he indicate he would, what is really going on in the background is that if you can't go to the parks after 7 in most instances, and some instances they close at 10, city parks, state parks, what is really happening there? You're reducing the available space to the public for general use and incorporating it into the daily activity of the general public. So they won't have access to that. And then at nighttime, you restrict the number of hours. So everyone now is having to, the use of recreational areas, for example, is between, let's say, the opening of the parks in the morning to the closing if it's 7 or 10 o'clock. Where are all these people going to recreate? And so I would suggest that instead of being involved with the falling victim to what the governor wishes to have, say no to his deal. You know, you have to be on top of it and not fall victim to this and take the bait. I wouldn't trust anything that this governor presents now. Absolutely nothing. Because the foundation, by the way, if he wanted us to know and take in full consideration what we would be saying, he would never have introduced a bill and suspended the environmental laws of the state. Proof's in the pudding. Let's see. We've got a caller here. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Good morning. Number one, you're absolutely right. We should not fall victim to any of this sleaze. And we need to look at who funds, where the funds come from, you know, in their campaign spending, if we can do that. And then you know who's doing what and why. I mean, that's always, you know, follow the money. That's number one. And number two, a totally different subject, I wanted to say thank you so much for that beautiful video you did of Novale. That is exquisite. Thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome.
You do beautiful work.
Well, I wish I could take all the credit.
Well, you and your wife.
I'm all thumbs when it comes to editing. But right. I got some ideas. But it's really moving and just assembling all of that. And as we know that Novale passed, the 16th of October, and Novale Gonzalez, and he actually is going to be a ceremony today at Kailua for the spreading of his ashes and what have you.
I guess that's as we speak at 8:30 this morning.
And the family invited us, but we just couldn't make it to have the show here. But he's done some great things, and he will be missed. And last night's memorial was just great there at the Waikiki Community Center.
Well, you know, like I said, and we've said 100 times, there's an old African legend story. As it goes, a person dies twice, once when the soul leaves the body, and the second time is when the last person who know him mm-hmm. dies.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to tell the story over and over again so that it does not die. And not just Novalay, but for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, your grandchildren tell the story of Papa and pass it on and on, because we have to remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, he will be sorely missed. You're welcome. And I just hope that we're going to post some on YouTube and be putting some on Olelo, because I think what Novalay did, and just if nothing else, for children or people that are having problems being themselves, you got a lot of wind in the background.
Yes, I'm outside. anyway, it is really hard. All of a sudden, the wind came from, and here comes a rain cloud. So
okay.
I will let you go.
All right, remember, sugar melts when you get wet.
Remember with the governor, follow the money trail.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thank you. Aloha. Anyway, even though this sounds like we got off track there, you've heard me talk about Novalay and the things that there are a lot of people out there. I'm simply not familiar with their aches, pains, their mental status, or just lack of positive image. And so what I liked about Novalay, and, you know, being gay and all of that, he was happy with himself. And that's what a lot of us, we never attain that. We're never able to do that. And as he would always say, I am what I am, and I'm going to make the best of it. And I always thought that that's a good approach. And it's positive. And a lot of people are being bullied about things or just saddened of who they are, and they're threatened by society because they can't be openly gay and what have you. But this gentleman made it, he was who he was, and did a good job at being positive no matter what, and others benefited from that whenever he was around, and that's what I admired about him. But anyway, who I'm not admiring is back here talking about our governor. And again, now I'm saying the governor, Neil Abercrombie, but let's not be fool and not forget that our state legislators condoned this, passed it. So they are just as culpable. I forget culpable. They're just as guilty for being a sleight of hand or being tricky and disrespectful toward the public. Nothing in this entire democratic process should have been presented the way the PLDC has been presented to us, shoved down our throats through trickery, through lying, through deceit, to hiding. And I'm here to tell you, these agencies managed by Governor Neil Abercrombie, and to include State Historic Preservation, they got many problems. There is sleaze there. You have boating and recreation, sleaze there. And I don't want to be a continuation of last week's show, but I guess it's difficult to say anything good when as we'll talk along the way, and I'm sure some of you will say, let's think positive. And I am. I'm thinking very positive. I'm thinking that this is their last turn that we will ever vote for this guy, Neil Abercrombie. I really do, because I have never seen anything so disappointing, so sleazy in their process, how they approach it. And right down to the voting, and we're going to talk about the voting and later on. But this we take the Department of Land and Natural Resources. I tell you that some of you may conclude or draw the conclusion that I'm just off the hook. I'm just being ridiculous with my comments. But I have the capacity and the ability to see all of this because I live it, eat it, and I love it. Not that I love making trouble, but I love the environment. I love the well-being of the people. And I'm just telling you, what you have as managers for the resources here, and our resources is just what we're packaging now and selling to the world to invite them to come here as a beacon to say, this is the uniqueness of this place called Hawaii. And nothing complements that in the actions of the governor. Nothing, absolutely nothing, because if you suspend the laws that would protect these resources, and he's not issued an executive order or an apology to the public or anything. So as far as I'm concerned, none of them stand. The DLNR, Land and Natural Resources, under William Island, I'm naming these organizations or these departments or branches under him, Forestry and Wildlife Service. It's nepotism, cronyism, and illegal behavior and just downright disrespectful. There's not a democratic thought, a bone in their body or in their administration as far as I'm concerned. I'm hearing that, and I haven't gotten it confirmed, that for 3 years now or so, the acting chief of the law enforcement branch of DLNR, who I talked about many times, have been allowed to, who lives in Maui, but have come here, stays every day and gets per diem every day and gets to fly back. And having little or no experience or expertise to manage all of these resources, yet William Eiler has been spoon-feeding this gentleman, Randy Alwall, turning his back. And this is the same William Eiler that was going to turn the world upside down with the activism and all of that. But and where did the spunk go, or was there ever any spunk there? You cannot have so many broken pieces and then come to a point where you're caught. Then you'd make a declaration that we want to listen to the people. You don't want to listen to the people because your actions are inconsistent with anybody wanting to listen. You may wish to force-feed us, but not. There's no listening. I've yet... And I'm not telling you folks, the listeners, that I'm brilliant and smart, but I am. I know conservation. I have a professional background in conservation and resource management and all of that. And I've learned since then a lot more. Not one time have I ever been consulted. Never. And you know that I'm always talking about it. So I question that. I haven't witnessed any assembling of any team or task force to ask questions. I haven't heard the governor revoking the suspensions of the environmental laws. So is he going to really listen to the public? I don't think so. It's not in his character to listen to people. It appears what I've seen lately, the most overt actions and what have you that allows me to judge this gentleman as the governor is that very little listening goes on from the public. He dictates to the public what his friends and who are his friends. I want to know when the people that ran his campaign, who are they? How can you arrive as governor one day and pronouncing suspending all the laws? You had to have been working in the background a long time. Why didn't you listen to the people on that one? We've invited them on the show. They won't respond. We've asked them for press releases. They won't respond. So, again, the governor doesn't want to listen. The governor wants to make money for his friends. That's what the governor wants. And William Eiler, shame on you. I mean, you cannot. I know somewhere down the line you have to be feeling a great degree of nausea about right now. If you are, the image is what you projected prior to getting in office. But I have to remind myself you were always a state employee. So Maybe I was tricked and duped into this like I was the image that Neil Abercrombie had presented. But again, I think we've been going too lightly, tiptoeing around this issue. And it's Donovan de la Cruz. Now all of a sudden, he got the Holy Ghost or the Spirit to want to do what's right because it's not real. These things were never put together anyway. It made no sense from the beginning. And shame on Donovan de la Cruz to now all of a sudden proclaim that maybe there's something wrong and he's in a threatening mode that he's going to. Maybe you should start thinking before accepting and promoting and passing bills and advocating for these things. So you're going to see some probably short buildings and probably more buildings, shorter buildings and more buildings there at Kaka'ako. I wish the governor would just lay out the plan, come clean and tell us where are we going with this. You see, there is just something just doesn't gel. There's something wrong with this. And is it because he now think the public is going to not vote him again, so he's changing his pace or changing his tune? He wants to listen to suggestions from various groups on how the law could be implemented to establish the state agency. How about that? Here's a man that came along, didn't tell you anything. And this is, by the way, quotes from the Star Advertiser on the 11-24-12 Saturday. So what is he going to listen to, the state agency? Does he listen to people on the bones of the Evie Kupuna that were people were concerned with? That the rail, nope. He went straight ahead. He railroaded this thing. I agree with the rail and, you know, and the hell with the Kupuna. Because he wanted to get the rail in like the rest of them. Yet, he has a plan. Now, we see more Kupuna Ivi being found in the construction sites of the zones that was proposed. Now, all of a sudden, he has the Holy Ghost, and he got spiritual, and he wants to listen to the people now. Please, people, don't fall for that. That is absolutely the greatest insult that one can receive, to be lied to, and then they approach you and give you a bundle of lies to explain the other lie and tell you, don't worry about it, we're going to work on it, and we'll compromise. There is no compromise. The state laws were as they were. But remember, he suspended also laws of historical preservation and the SHPTI. So because he know that there are Kupuna Ivi in these areas and he know that he didn't intend to address it properly because he was hell-bent like many of the others, of getting the rail in. So the thing is, he wants to sell state land. Who does he want to sell it to? Developers. He didn't want to sell it to anyone that want to make a park or make a facility for, they talk about sustainability and open space, and yet, the only thing that's open in development here is the back door to the governor's office and to the legislators. And I wish somehow that we would be able to get the documents, know the meetings. The governor's office and his staff seem to have a revolving door. They come, they go. Today they're announced as part of the team, and next month, 2 months, 3 months, they're no longer there. What's with all of that? So we're not being properly and adequately spoken to as adults. We're being tricked. The magic man is doing his thing, and then I guess his brother Bonnie Raitt or whatever, what role William Eyler, just so comical. Everything that's nonsense, and I say it's all nonsense because he suspended all the laws. So whatever he wants to tell us now is still stupid. It's just dumb because there's no laws. He suspended them. And every time there's an issue as it relates to the resources or Kakako or PLDC or SHPD, up pops the bunny rabbit. There is William Eyler making a statement of sorts and support, clouding the issue. And I'm sorry. I mean, I know Eyler, but this is about people's business. And if you're going to be the rabbit that's being pulled out of the hat when something is needed to excuse and to excuse his bad behavior, then so be it. You know, we will part our ways as gentlemen and just we have to call it what it is. You cannot be that wrong that many times and the basis of your decisions are wrong because you know you're standing there and you help him hide the fact that he suspended the environmental laws. He suspended the zoning laws. So whatever is said after that, Mr. Eyler and the others that support this, a place with no law is really not a place. It's turmoil. It's craziness. It's nonsense. It's disrespectful to the free people that we are supposedly living under a free nation. But if we have a dictator who's, by sleight of hand, removing our laws and then moving forward to bring in big business, because I haven't seen, and I say big business because, first of all, I thought we were broke. I haven't seen any monies where the state was proposing to make these developments on its own independently. So that's why I say I would really love to see what is going on with this. And that is what I'm really concerned with. And take it or leave it, I know probably isn't what some of you see in the jolly little round guy who's pouring that trash in every little canyon. But I, too, can be sick of the stomach by government. It's the same factors and elements that causes me concern and to be upset and ashamed of how we treat the earth and the environment and what have you. Those same things exist when I look at government. So, you know, don't be shocked. And no, I'm not a radical. I'm just telling you what others fail to tell you in the fashion that I tell you. And I know it's probably abrasive, but it's good. For me, it's good. Someone need to tell these folks. And so, give you an example. There's musical chairs at DLNR. Okay, if the information that I've gotten is wrong, then I will be the first to come and tell you. But there was a decision to be made and interviews conducted after many years just leaving the position vacant. And they're in bed. DLNR is in bed with some national organizations, nonprofits, and the certification of their officers. And people don't give you money without wanting something. And we're going to talk extensively about that in the coming weeks, about the money that is available, that is being handed to the DLNR. Conservation groups, what do they want? Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Hi, Carol. You know, I'm so disappointed and saddened by Abercrombie because I go way back. I remember when he was this radical professor out of the University of Hawaii protesting the Vietnam War and as he moved up the political ladder, you know, first as a representative there in Manoa and then as a city councilman, and then I guess what changed is when he got Congress in Washington, and you know you are kind of in in kind of an ivory tower there, and I guess maybe it just kind of went to his head. And at this point, I mean, I always thought he understood the democracy deal, you know, where we all kind of have an input the people are listened to, you know. Anyway, I'll listen to your comments, but I'd like to know what happened or what is happening to people like that. I think I'll give you a theory. I think what happens is they get comfortable in that. I think they forget their roots. I think, you know, mm-hmm. and you know what? Then they forget. They don't quite understand that what they're doing is kind of it's kind of corrupt, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
it's sad because you know. Anyway, let me listen to your comments off the air.
Okay. Well, thanks. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Aloha.
Thanks.
Yeah. The entire process, and you know, it's about time. And in the next hour, I'm hoping to play a soundbite that Claudia Charters talked about, the takers and what have you, and how who's taking what. But we're stuck. We are. I played that song or the first hour, the opening song, because it's really interesting how we get ourselves in these positions or these predicaments. And these are, you know, everyone say, well, you know, I'm surprised Neil Abercrombie, dope smoking, liberal hippie type in the old days. And liberal, you couldn't see, and yet, when he went off to Washington, or was he this way always, learning how to navigate? And I thought, well, if Isla's going to be appointed by this guy, then maybe there's hope for taking on issues. But the reality is, both were activists. And I have been around many administrations in California, in Illinois, in Wisconsin, Indiana, when it comes to, and many other states, when it comes to the management of resources. You always have your politics, and you always have the revolving door at the top. If a cattle rancher wants to run the Department of Land and Natural Resources in certain states, he would go up and partner up and butter the governor and get appointed. We understand that. And the national levels, if the Secretary of Interior has an interest in harvesting timber on BLM land or renting it or leasing it for grazing, he'll court Obama or George Bush. Those things are okay. But we know who they are from the start. The problem here is that these two guys, Isla and Abercrombie, see, that's a little different, because Ilo was even up for contempt of court and still in the K'ai or whatever, or removing the K'ai or hiding the K'ai. I don't know what the legal terms were, but this is what I thought. We would have a person saying, well, yes, I'll take the position, but we're not going to have this hoo-hoo or this nonsense. I'm going to stand firm. And I know some of you are going to probably go, oh, the broad's talking about the broad. No, it doesn't work that way. Not in my realm. Not in my little fishbowl. If you screw the people, then you're screwing the people, and I'm going to try to inform the people, and don't be offended by it. That's just the way it is. If it was my mother, I'd be telling on her too, or calling her names, because she wouldn't have it any different. But this is just wrong, and I wish I could sit down and be more eloquent with you and write a long article and explaining it to you. I can't find myself to arrive at that moment, because I know historically with this administration, the Abercrombie administration, it's corrupt. So therefore, I can't take a pen and sit down and marry it up to some paper and write something and be eloquent about it. I have to tell you, if you don't think you have a right to be frustrated on this one, because there's so many other things. You take the school issue. The magician came in, whap, moved the school board, got rid of it, inserted another one. Everything up and down, and guess what? The value of education is diminishing because we have teachers now protesting. Teachers have agreed to certain things or were left in limbo or whatever it was with this administration. And now, guess what? Our schools, our children's education are on the limb right now. So I know that I'm accurate in my description. This is corruption. This is two able-bodied people that came to do good for themselves and their big money friends. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Hi. Hey, Carol. I don't know if you remember me, but I was working with Esther back when we were on the show, Ethan Only Porter.
Yes.
I'm calling because, you know, I fully agree with your assessment of the Abercrombie administration, and I'm actually now a teacher, and, yeah, I kind of feel duped by the fact that the son of a teacher and a person who was a professor at the university is now turning really anti-education, but I really wanted to call about William Ayala.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I was thinking about it, and I understand where your grief is coming from, but I was thinking about it from his perspective that, you know, he is kind of a outsider. He was kind of a radical. And, you know, when you're up, when you take a radical person and you put them inside of a system and you tell them, you know, you make the people happy by doing that, but at the same time you restrict that radicalness that that person can be. And because if you're too radical in that position, they're going to fire you and they're going to put somebody in who is more worse than you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just, you know, looking at it from a historical perspective where we've seen similar things happen, especially through the history of the Kingdom of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
You see that you have these people who are really radical who are put in, but then they're chained down by the system and the threat that if you're too radical, you're going to do something, they're either going to replace you or they're going to, and the person they're going to replace you with is going to be far worse than you are.
Yeah, but when...
what I think is going on with William Ayala.
Right, but when a governor suspends the environmental laws, how does a real radical not speak out on that? When you suspend laws, you issue an executive order, and you proceed, and you stand there...
Yeah, I mean, I've had it up to here with, you know, Abercrombie. I'm really upset because I actually was working at the university for the paper, mm-hmm. and I interviewed him, and I really felt confident in voting for him mm-hmm. after I had met with him and spoken with him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and now it's like, well, thanks for nothing.
Yeah, this is a fine line, but I'll speak it anyway. What I would submit is that the Hawaiian community, like many other communities, the black community, whatever community you find, there's no perfect person. You do have to compromise. But I submit this. All the land in Hawaii wasn't taken by gunpoint. Some of it was taken by circumnavigating and co-opting and corrupting individuals within the Hawaiian community, giving them something, favoring them, and they were willing to. Let's be honest. If we're going to talk history, and it's there. We're human beings. Corrupt people appeal to people's good side. They get them inside the loop. And it takes a strong person to say, I like the job, but I don't like the game, so therefore I'm leaving. Right? Now, Mr. Ayala may have some great ideas and hoping to accomplish them. I will never know. But when I hear that an entire area, Kaka'ako, is being developed and the entire state is subjected to big business coming through the back door and we don't know who they are and we haven't seen any plans submitted by the governor as any building proposals or anything.
I don't think there are any plans, honestly.
Right. You understand? So let's not hang our hats on how nice Ayala is. I'm not questioning Isla's character. I'm questioning his activities and his participation in this, because you can always walk out the door, you see. Instead,
yeah, but if it was me in that position, I'd be concerned about who they'd replace me with, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. So you good? What? Because you're fearful? I'm just asking. If you're fearful,
well,
that they may
fearful
put.
Of, you know, there's people like William Isla, and then there's people like the guys who run D.R. Horton and stuff like that, and they, you know, they're sitting on the Board of Water Supply.
Right.
What happens if one of those guys gets promoted to the big chair?
Well, they don't have to get promoted. They just go through the back door. That's my point. See, we're all thinking that they're going. They're not interested in getting in government because there's too many strings attached and accountability. They will never go and get in government unless they are really. Look, this is what they do. Nestor Garcia, the poster child of using a government official to accomplish what you want. You pay them. Now, Nestor Garcia was a news reporter. Nestor Garcia is a man of ethics. He makes that declaration. But he couldn't say no. So, again, I hate to rain on your parade, and not yours per se, but anybody out there. I get this a lot. Well, you know, William is a good. I don't care. The point is, you can't have that many broken pieces and then turn around and say, well, he has to be careful. No, I'd rather have someone to say to the public, I can no longer participate in this administration, and you can hire whoever you want, and if they don't do right, I will be holding your ankles as a pit bull. You follow? There's that angle.
I appreciate your opinion, and I appreciate what you do on your show.
Yeah, but again, it's not the attack on William Island, so if people see me out there, don't waste my time or your time thinking, because I don't care. I'm telling you, even I can be corrupted. You give me a lot of money and a Mercedes-Benz, I'll take a pink Cadillac. If you just give me that, man, I might do it. Forget illegal dumping. You know, we all have a little larceny in our hearts. But the point is, once you hop on that team, there's a lot of people in the background. Bill Kaneko, I'd like to know where he is. How are the guys on the Big Island? How did they get involved? Who picked these people? Where are they from, right?
Yeah.
And I haven't heard anyone. This is the way I would do it. If I witnessed the governor being underhanded or sliding the public, I would make sure that there would be all kinds of anonymous letters floating in and out to various nonprofit groups and to the public. You know, you can stand up, and if you say, Governor, no, I can't participate in this. There's Kupuna Ivi being found. You want the rail. You remember, he signed off on this. William Isla signed off on that, right? Before you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he signed off. Now they're finding Ivi Kupuna. How do we navigate around that? I mean, I would like to see him stand up, and how do he leave a position open and pay when even the rules of the between the union and the rules and the workplace agreements, a person can't stay in a temporary position more than 90 days. How did he allow this gentleman to stay there more than 2.5 years, 3 years? He didn't have full control. You follow?
I follow, yeah.
And then how do we allow officers? Right now, this DLNR is so badly broken, conservation officers. I tell you how I'm concerned. Just one, and I'll let you go. You can, and that is, we have officers that need to respond to calls of violations. They're not properly equipped. So if they're speeding down the highway, rushing to an emergency call or what have you, they don't have the proper light bars. They're not properly placarded. They don't have a siren. So you and I are possibly subjected to a great danger because the people that are managing this agency can't see that they need to equip these officers with the proper equipment. How does Isla allow that to continue to fester? On our website, we post the letter from HGA enumerating the number of violations and disagreements and just outright. At some point, we have to just call a spade, and it's a card, it's a card. And that's the way it is, as far as I'm concerned. But any got any other point?
Just that the whole DLNR is a messed up system, and mm-hmm. I think, you know, whoever you put in there would fuck it up pretty possibly. Right? Pretty bad, because, yeah.
Yeah, but this is a beautiful place.
It's centralized, and it needs to be decentralized, and right. I'm sure you know all this already. But.
Yeah. But, I thank you for your call. But, it's just if one takes on the position, then they should own up to it. And I know there's always compromise. Don't get me wrong. You don't want to jeopardize. I mean, for me, from a law enforcement background, I pick up the paper and I see people say, oh, the policemen running a red light, and they're not going anywhere. You know, for me, having that background, I know that you could be responding to a silent alarm. You know what I'm saying? Or you may get a call and have to turn around and throw your lights or go through the light. So we need to trust that the officers in the process are going to hire people with integrity. And we hope and pray that none of them will become abusive to that, right?
Right.
So we never know, but on the other hand, if we find an officer doing this routinely and we have a number of accidents as a result of that, and you go to the police chief and he says, well, everything's fine, then we need to look at the police chief because he's not addressing the problem. So that's the equivalent, and I don't know if it makes sense, but we all need to own up to who we are, and if we say we're going to take a job, just know that the man wants you to carry out his wishes, and they may not all be good. Well, thank you.
It was great talking to you, Carol.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Anyway, it's a mixed bag of nuts, and it's a very sensitive one because nobody likes to talk. It's a rule. You can't talk bad about the brother. You know, that's something I think it has contributed to the failure and of many communities, because we can't take the brother, and I use that loosely, or the sister, and hold their feet to the fire. You see, if not, then we become frowned upon. But it's time to let that go when we find an individual that is contributing to the demise and the failure of a process, a community, or robbing the people, and not for the good of the people. Whether it's intentional or just to go along, get along, we have a moral obligation, whether it's brother, sister, cousin, father, uncle, because it's not our government. It's our government, but not individually, where we can then twist and sell it and strip it and give it away and what have you. So anyway, I'll see you in the next hour, and please join me.
Second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108.
This is KWAI Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
You ain't nothing but a hound. Been snooping around my door. You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Somebody let the dogs out. We need some pit bulls. We need somebody to be. Remember that old Coppertone tan commercial, sunscreen, where the dog's biting at the little girl behind there? That's what we need in government. We need an attorney general. We need some enforcement here. We need some regulatory effort to bring back, and I mean the U.S. Attorney office, because there's a lot of underhandedness here. And again, this is a Carol Cox show. We'll talk about these things. Case in point, let me give you an example of a good local boy. Why a lot of people stood quiet, and why we have to be careful with the localism, and be careful that while we are willing to localism, and this is my own concocted explanation, localism can be just as deadly as racism, because case in point, as you saw that our Mr. Mufi Hanneman, local boy, talk the language. We're having forced down our throat a rail with many problems, concerns about the historical aspects of the community and the cultural concerns. Yet his project has thrust it upon the doorsteps of trouble and turning their backs. Localism get you a super ferry. Because localism, you don't listen to the world's ideas about conservation and the deadly interactions of whales may have with super fairies and turtles and all. But here at localism, we tend to throw out common sense and logic and go with the bro. And in fact, it's a funny thing when you want to put up a plant that hasn't proven itself, then they abandon localism and says, well, they have one of those factories operating in Pyongyang or in Puerto Rico, but you won't find one located in the confines or the boundaries of the United States. So it's always something. When it's convenient, they'll go local. When it's not convenient, they'll go abroad. When they find that it's okay and need to refer, they'll refer to something that's not local. But localism can paint you in a corner just as easy as a person that comes in here and with the intent of doing you harm, because we invest our trust, and I think that speaks to the political system here. And that we, you know, when do we get to meet our elected officials? Most of the times they show up at a bond dance, and you don't have any quality time to inquire or ask them directly. Or how about this one? They stand on a street corner, and you're trying to navigate traffic that's busy, and they're waving at you, and you conclude from that you're going to vote for them because they're sitting there with the sign, with the shaka. That's localism. And either way, you still get the same fruits and nutcakes and what have you in office, running the government, and bringing the other fellow in. And case in point, let's look at, and we'll talk, this is category here, but look at how they handle Manahan, the city council. I want to look into that. Maybe some of you can share with me, and I got other subjects. But I thought he ran for office or was a state representative, and the guy said that he won. But Manahan did something underhanded for the Cotola. So how is it that the city council appoint, they choose to, or not they, they appointed, the mayor appointed Manahan or whoever it is that appoints him. Now, did he win the Cotola position? Or did he run for office? I'm just curious. Why would they appoint him right away? So something's crazy about this, but anyway, with the PLDC, and I'm going to conclude on this, it's something that's it affords us an opportunity to say that in 2011 September, I sat on this show and told you how bad it was with Michael Ostendorf, and we didn't predict, we just saw that we hadn't seen any information, and we knew that the PLDC, as the bill, it didn't even exist. The bill was being proposed. And at that time, we concluded that it was bad. Dr. K. Cooney Blaisdell, in my research and his organization, also had concluded early on, prior to even me understanding what was going on. Yet, they're proceeding and pushing along. So I suspect there's a lot more to come. State lands being grabbed, and the compensation just isn't there, and it's not worth it. So that's what we need to do is look at that. And there are the people that are out there taking. And I'm going to play something for you, but you know, this in the early elections, you hear a lot of talk about, we got to take our country back. Now, I don't know about you, but I wasn't invited to the Take Our Country Back party. They didn't invite me, and they didn't consult me. So I guess I was excluded. And to tell you the truth, I don't know why you and I weren't invited to that party or consulted. And who are they talking about when they take back America? You know, and the I've heard some horrible jokes about this, and though they're jokes, you hear some of the bigots openly making remarks, and for example, do excuse me, I hate to repeat stupidity, but sometimes it's worth it, and that is, the stupidity is that they say, well, because you hear this discussion of the, quote, browning of America. So I guess that triggers fear. Or women are taking over the world. That triggers fear. And so there is this joke that says, well, will the last white man bring the flag leaving America? How atrocious, how horrible is that? That people would sit and say things like that when, in fact, no one should fear America falling into oblivion or being destroyed because of people of color becoming more numerous. I have one piece of advice, and that is if you bring people and pluck them from their shores, their native lands, and enslave them, and then you make the mistake of relying on them to do your heavy work and your sweat and tears and all of that while you play tennis, just always remember, don't ever educate them, and don't let them give birth to it, because eventually your leisure hours may turn into your nightmare. That's just a little funny side of this, but the reality is, don't worry about America being browned. That's just bigotry at its worst, and I think that everyone should know that America is what it is, a collection, as we say, a melting pot. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Thank you very much for taking my call. My name is DeConcy Richard. I've called before. I wanted to comment on the newly elected council member, and this is the article on Friday, November 11th. It states, newly elected council member nominated to fill Cachola vacancy. City Council-elect Joey Monahan in August won the election to succeed Cachola. Could take office next week instead of the January 2nd. Martin Thursday introduced resolution nominating to fill the vacancy. It makes sense to appoint the incoming council member to serve the district that elected him. I am confident the council member-elect will represent the district well, ensure the needs of his community. Manahan will represent the 7th Council District.
Mm-hmm.
The resolution would go before the council at the start of regular monthly meeting on Wednesday. This article is on Friday, the 9th of this month.
Mm-hmm.
Cachola couldn't run again. He's going to the state. members of the legislature began their term the day after the election. Vacancy exists. Gabbard resigned, and then former state Carol Fukunaga won the special election but cannot be sworn in until after a 20-day period to allow for any election challenges to be filed. If none is filed, she would be sworn in as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what has happened with Joey Monahan.
Right. So did he run for state representative? What was that issue with Martin, the young man that challenged, filed a complaint?
No, I don't have any information about that.
Okay.
I remember that it was an issue, but I don't have that right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What bothers me, thank you so much for your unique contribution for the giving information we cannot get from any other source. I try to follow as closely as I can. And what bothers me is that Nestor Garcia found guilty and fined $6,500, but never censured, mm-hmm. never any publicity. But Tom Berg is gone, the most active member of the council, along with Dan Kobayashi.
Mm-hmm.
And Berg is gone. And Garcia has finished his term.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad politics. It's criminal.
Yeah.
I am going to testify this week. I believe it's on Thursday at the city council. It's going to be about transit issues.
Mm-hmm.
And just this past week, there was an article on the front page of the newspaper which states that money has been diverted from the bus and the van to the rail. So I brought this up 3 or 4 years ago and continue to do it verbally and in writing,
mm-hmm.
and have gotten absolutely no response. A letter handed to Morton. Ask returned address mail back to me 6-7 months ago. Nothing. Mm-hmm. I brought this up verbally about 2 or 3 months ago, verbally in front. And the person who answered was not Morton. It was Wayne Yoshioka.
Okay.
And this is what's happening.
Well, thank you for your call and that information. Hopefully that give a little more insight.
Well, thank you very much for what you've done.
All right. Thank
Aloha,
you.
Bye.
Aloha. Aloha. The I'm just curious as to all of these things, and while I may have comment about them, it's just craziness, crazy. But and real quick, back to that subject of the Browning of America, and so there was also this thing about taking, the takers, and the free gifts, and you know, my advice to anybody, even the Democrats, don't take human beings for granted. You cannot continue to insult and assault them, their integrity, and when you present yourselves in an underhanded fashion. Eventually, we wake up. It takes a while, but the longer I'm looking at history, the worse it is. And our response is a little more harsher. So with this taking back America from people like myself who just so happen to be brown, and when I hear this, it's as if, and I'll give you a little scenario, there are people that believe that America is becoming too brown. They have no trouble when they're in my presence to say and spew such nonsense that, yeah, we got to take, and no offense to you, Carol, but, you know, we have to take back America. Oh, we do? Who said we ever lost it? You know, so there's a lot of soul searching need to be done on behalf of those that want to take back America. And so that's what I would offer. And again, because not only it seems to be synonymous with this is what they want to present and suggest, that gifts and freebies and all of that and brown people are sucking at the public's trough and driving up the cost of living, and the economy is about to fall over the cliff because of the browning of America, when in fact it has nothing to do with that. So Claudia Charter sent me a little piece that she wanted to share with you, and I thought it would be appropriate about the takers. So if you would bear with me, I'm going to play that, and then we'll move on and talk about the Humane Society shortly.
It is contributing to the common good, and it's not all a bad thing. We'll let that go for the moment. I started to think, our shopping, we pay sewer taxes and others, we vote, do jury duty, we care for our families and neighbors as best we can. So what is this taker? What is the taker that he's talking about? Is it all about how much you have and how much you're taxed? What's the value of his grandchild, I wondered. Hey, he asked me about myself after all. Is he going to send the boy out to sell matches on the street? Or is the boy a taker? What is the value of my friend's homemaker wife? Is she a taker also? You know, asserting one fact about the income tax, as if it tells an entire story, reminds me of Disraeli's remark, there are three kinds of lies. Lies, damned lies, and statistics. Now, we know that public policy is much more complex than a single fact stated in a vacuum as gospel truth. In fact, I think using a statistic in this fashion says more about the one wielding it. As for me, I see upwards of 99% of my fellow citizens, brothers and sisters, if you will, doing the very best they can, playing by the rules, showing up at minimum wage jobs before dawn, going to school, caring for their families, struggling with the challenges and mortality we all face, as well as being kind, most of them, to strangers. I see a lot of heroes everywhere I go, and their value has nothing to do with dollars. Is being a taker about working, or is it about having, I wondered? Is a senior on food stamps who played by the rules and contributed their entire life a taker, but not a 25-year-old trust fund winner who merely travels and spends? Fascists, in the living memory of some of us, used to talk about useless eaters. They had laws, the Nazis did. They sterilized people with mental illness, people who were blind or deaf, even alcoholics. The Third Reich also had a lot of propaganda against the disabled and labeled them life unworthy of life. That's right, they called them useless eaters and a burden on society. I think that's one of the things we fought a war about. As for me, I'd rather live next door to a middle-class, nice guy than a wealthy fascist who pays a lot of income taxes. Or wait, is the middle-class guy a taker because he worked his whole life and now gets Medicare? You know, human beings have intrinsic value. In fact, we're created equal. That's what our Constitution says. And that's why we put our pets out of their final misery. But we don't do Grandpa that way. He's still here. We can love and care for him. He loves us. His every glance is valuable. Now, if Grandpa's last words aren't about where the treasure is buried, does that make him a taker? We live in a complex modern society. The days of self-sufficient yeoman farmers, each on their own plot of land, have become days of centralized production, centralized distribution, a lot of centralized wealth. Now, just as the missionaries in Hawaii are said to have planted the Kaavi thorn, so the Hawaiians would need shoes and therefore have to work for them, so our modern society is one in which competing with the big boys, whose lobbyists wrote the rules, is kind of too complex and expensive for the average person. We need to get a Small Business Administration loan. We need student grants to learn new skills. Ah, but that would make us takers. So, most of us need to get a job. And if we're considered of value, we'll have no problem. So the theories of those who never lived paycheck to paycheck go. I kind of see a different story working out around me today. I know there's a lot of good brothers and sisters, people with skills and a lot of heart who want to work. Can't find jobs. You know, I drive on those roads my tax is built. I eat food grown and transported by others. My contributions to others aren't all about dollars being transferred these days, folks. I haven't had a paycheck job in a while. And though I worked from age 14, and I have contributed to our retirement in my modest way, my husband still gets up every morning and goes to work for pay. I keep our home. I cook food. I love that guy. Am I a taker? A prostitute? I'll have to ask my conservative friend to decide for me. He seems to have all the easy answers. Well, this is Claudia Charters saying, thanks for spending a minute listening. Have a great week. Aloha.
Oh, yeah!
All right. Anyway, what we have here is just a little insight. And by the way, you can catch that at HawaiiTalking.com or HawaiiIsTalking.com. That's a website. Any of you that have something you'd like to post or an audio that you have produced personally, you can send me an email at carol@carolcox.com and we can post that up for you. Again, it's HawaiiTalking.com. We will give you a voice, and if we'll also play it on air. I mean, we don't want to be insulting anyone. Don't call up and want to disseminate racist hatred or anti-woman language, anything, promoting anything that's negative in that sense. So, but you're more than welcome to, and if it's if you limit to 5 minutes or so, let you have your own voice, and don't hesitate. But anyway, again, real quick, and I'm going to move on to the Humane Society. You noticed that Joe Suki was in the news and hurriedly proclaiming he has enough votes for the leadership. Here's a little warning. Joe Suki is the guy that wanted to put the cameras in, and Joe Suki went ahead and put the cameras in along the streets and clogged the courtrooms up. And, again, big money handling Mr. Suki. Mr. Suki is not for the people, in my opinion, and never has been. So I would say, and I'm not advocating for Shiro or anyone, but I would say to you, I know Joe Suki. I've watched him, and there are many other things, and chairman of the transportation in the House and what have you, and his stance on gay lesbian rights is questioned, because I'm informed that he was one time agreeing to it because his nephew was gay or something to that effect, and then decided to vote against it because his religion told him to. So, again, that's just a little side commentary. Be careful of Joe. And if you want him, go ahead. Just know that you'll see more cameras, and God only knows what else he has, what bag of tricks he and his friends and big business has. So that's the issue there. Now, on the, for those of you that are wanting to follow this, Tuesday, November 27th of this year at 10 a.m. at the State Office Tower, there will be William Marston, the chairman of the Elections Commission, will be basically the discussion and review of the County of Hawaii 2012 general elections to include recommendations to future elections held in that county. Six, discussion and review of the state 2012 elections, general elections, report from the Chief of Elections Officers, Commissioners' observations, Office of Election and Elections Commission recommendations, and consider and evaluate the role and performance of the Office of Election and Chief Elections Officer in preparing for and conducting the 2012 elections, general elections, and take action if appropriate. I think action needs to be taken, and he should be fired, in my personal opinion, based on when you add in the Hawaii incident, the Big Island incident, and other islands, and then this one. And the unanswered question still stands, what and how are you handling the foreign language ballots? I look in their brochure that they give, the 2012 delivery and collection manual. I can't find any mentioning of the foreign language ballots. And I'm informed that the foreign language ballots are just in a utility can. But if you look here, there's no speaking of them in the security, unless I've overlooked, and I'll look again. But I'm concerned, and I've spoken to three people, and one bothered to write it down and send it to me, explaining that they've discovered foreign language ballots in a utility can rather than the control locked secured. And speaking of we talked about localism, and thanks to the article that talked about Kurt Caldwell's showing the letter sent out to Dave Shapiro, who did it in his Volcanic Ash, talking about the use of appealing to Japanese to vote for him or Kurt Caldwell. I think that's atrocious. Anybody participating in that is not looking to see the new world. So we need to quit that, and we need to watch this guy Caldwell, because the same elements that were supporting Mufi Hanneman from all walks of life, and we've been getting quite a bit of information, and I will definitely be reporting it to you. He has a very colorful crew with criminal backgrounds and all that supported him and participated aggressively in his campaign. So let's see if Mr. Clean Jeans is going to stand up to the test as we go, or is it just another Mufi Hanneman? Okay, but anyway, Tom Berg introduced, City Councilman Tom Berg introduced a bill 57, talking about, well, just basically, I'm not speaking to the bill per se, the animal controls laws, and be it ordained that the people of the city and county, the purpose of the ordinance is to amend portions of the animal control law. And I'm reading 57-2012 FD1 CD1. Basically it was speaking to, revised ordinance of 1990 is amended by adding a new section, and he's adding humane destruction. It may have been rewritten since I got this, but, humane destruction of animals, public notification requirement. Unless an animal is not available for adoptions pursuant to subsection B, the animal control contractor shall provide the following information to nonprofit animal sheltering agencies and rescue groups upon their request, and at least 24 hours before any animal within the animal control contractor's custody is scheduled to be humanely destroyed, to enable the nonprofit animal sheltering agencies and rescue groups to notify the public at large via an internet website of animals that are scheduled to be humanely destroyed. And a couple of those people, and I'm just was interested in the opposition. While the bill is good, the good intentions, there are some things that really need to be tweaked, because I didn't see any penalty sections if the Humane Society receives animals and fail to follow the law. What happens? I didn't see that. I was just posting it up on the internet. There needs to be some greater restrictions or requirements in that, because there's too many excuses. In 24 hours notifying someone, you got to gear up, and if it's holidays and what have you. But anyway, the intent is to reduce the killing and the euthanasia, the amount of animals being euthanized at the Humane Society. You know that they have a contract with the city and county of Honolulu. Some of you might be remember that when I first started this effort in the animal protection and what have you in the city here, trying to change the laws, I found that, and Honolulu Weekly did it, Andrea Baer did an article with my support and help, called Helter Shelter. And we found them, you know, talk about the number of animals being euthanized and what have you. And I actually, at night, in the dark of night, snuck over, and you can see animals stacked up next to the burners and the oven, so to speak. And these poor animals, I mean, if you can imagine, waiting to be roasted, burned, is wouldn't be a pleasant. And the smell of your fellow animals, friends, or whatever you call them, or your pack, being burned to death, just wouldn't. So I think the Humane Society have changed that, but we wouldn't know because they put up a higher vinyl fence. And there at that facility, they have an incinerator. And at one time, I pull up the records, and there's a large number of animals being incinerated, euthanized and incinerated. And what struck me about this bill is that instead of supporting the bill, the Humane Society rejected it and opposed it. And so did a number of other individuals that are either working with or organizations. For example, Laura Thompson of the Humane Society. She was in 1969, 1980. I served as executive director of the Hawaiian Humane Society. During those decades, I was also a member of the Committee on Boards. So here's a person opposing that, that bill, but in my opinion has an interest. But then the Hawaiian Humane Society has taken care of animals with compassion and care since 1883. I read these emails of testimony, and I'm thinking to myself, even if you've been in since the year 2000, reducing the amount of euthanasia is the right thing to do. So how do you do that? Well, you do that by embracing bills such as this, and while they're not perfectly written, the intent behind them is a perfect idea. It's a move that's moving forward, because I can tell you, as a person who go out and participate in the TNR, trap, neuter, and release, understand, the Humane Society does not save every animal. One of the things that jumped out at me that I was really taken aback by, listen to this, the Hawaiian Humane Society guarantees a home for 100% of the healthy, adoptable dogs and cats we receive. This is their testimony. Animals are now able to remain with us and receive love and care as long as it takes to find a new family. Folks, I'm going to tell you, my experience, not true. My background and knowledge and observations and my opinion, this isn't true. But again, they opposed it. And you understand why they would oppose such a bill. In my opinion, the opposition is embedded and gets its start from anybody in the business of caring for animals poses a threat to the Humane Society, Hawaiian Humane Society, because they might eventually compete for the $2.3 million or $2 million more annually that they get from the city. They also may pose a risk or a threat that that facility is owned, the land is owned by the city, and they get a pretty good deal, almost for pennies. For a number of years, I think, I need to be corrected if I'm wrong here, at least 25, 50 years they get this lease going. And these are the same people that have the agricultural land in Halawa, which is not, they put their claws on it, and now no other organization can get it. But to claim that animals are now able to remain with us and receive love and care as long as it takes to find new families. Here is the concern that I have. The Oahu SPCA, for example, we're looking at these claims that they are delivering animals to the Humane Society. So quite naturally, they would be inclined to speak on behalf in opposition of Bill 57, supporting the Humane Society's stance. So something is wrong with this behavior, and that, again, Bill 57 is not perfect. The intent, I applaud it. You don't want to make convoluted laws and they become as cumbersome or as hopeless, the end product is nothing, zero, zilch. It becomes crippling. But we have a population of cats, for example, that any person giving 5 minutes to look at this would know. The Humane Society, the Hawaiian Humane Society, used to charge $5 per cat to neuter, spay, neuter. So if I were to trap a cat, take him in, by the way, using my own expenses and time and gas and to go in, to have him neutered, and in turn, they would put a microchip on him or her or him, And I would pay $5. Well, overnight they raise that to $25. So guess what, per ket? So that will discourage, and I believe that is one of the contributing factors that we see a greater, an increase of cats, wild population. Now, there are other factors that, but I suspect that it was cost prohibitive when you can go in and pay $5 per cat to have them neutered. And if it's a female, imagine how many cats in a year would be produced if they were to mate. So why would the Humane Society raise its prices to $25 and yet turn around and oppose any bill that would ask to prevent or reduce or work toward reducing the number of euthanized animals? And I look at this, and as I said in the earlier comments, in the early hour, in some Hawaii's challenges, in some mainland communities where reducing euthanasia has been most successful, there are several open admission shelters in a county that form a safety net with a multitude of rescue groups to help. These networks are strengthened by well-funded county programs. Well, this program here is funded well with the Humane Society, but in older audits, it was difficult to discern what monies were being spent where, and there were a great many questions raised. And so to oppose this bill brings me to this one point. If I was a general public out there, I would never give another nickel personally to the Humane Society. I would take them off of my gift list until they stand up. Instead of opposing, they stand up and participate. Well, if it was a poor bill and they don't agree with the full body of the bill or the contents, then work with them and change it. But don't sit in your high seat, your core wood chairs, and then turn around and say you oppose the bill. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Good morning, Carol. Great show as always. One of the things you might consider is the fact that the Humane Society, as part of its contract, gets $6 or $7 per animal they euthanize. Now, the last time I was in at intake, the chart on the wall said last year they did 20,000. They euthanized 20,000. At $6 or $7 a shot, that's a consideration on their part.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. I've had difficulty there too. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you calling. And any of you out there, I'm going to talk about this a later date because I'm putting together some things, and I didn't participate in the testifying of it because I just hope that through education people will not hurry to pass a bill and that bill become as useless and it becomes an obstacle. The intent of the bill is great. The mechanics of it need some tweaking, but it is the Humane Society that I believe erred in this situation, as many other instances that they do. We need to rid ourselves of this image, this Bambi image that is being projected by the Humane Society. We go away with, we turn on the TV, if it's KITV, there's some animals and there's some cute little cuddly dogs with the chocolate nose, or they're going to a chocolate party, or they're going to a tuxedo party, or they're going to have a date. That's all fine and good. I submit this one question. What do you do with the money that you get from the love bug when you appeal to the people and they sit there and they see cute little bubble eyes, Pekingese or whatever the dog is, or a cute little set of kittens? They write a check. The question comes is that what are you doing to enhance the role of the TNR people, the people that are volunteering, that are coming out of pocket, What are you doing to prevent or avoid retaliation when one or any of these people speak out against you? You close the door, as we've seen some while back with Jennifer Kishimori of Cat Friends. When someone opposes a bill to prevent and reduce euthanasia, something's wrong. You're standing too close to the incinerator and you're smelling the toxins. Anybody in their right mind would immediately grab hold of that. And if you don't agree with that bill 57, then you have lawyers and doctors and Indian chiefs sitting on your staff. And if you meant well, you would have simply authored or sought to author or work with Councilman Berg to introduce an equivalent bill or a bill that is more effective, that one that wouldn't be offensive as you described. So I question the validity and the mindset and the intent of the Humane Society, of the Hawaiian Humane Society in this instance, based on what I know factually. Let me give you an example. Today, if I wanted to trap a cat, I have to take a trap and go out and trap that cat. Spend the time. If he's hungry, he goes in quick. If he's been trapped before, he won't go in quick, or, you know, whatever. Or you might get lucky. He just said, oh, what the heck, it's time for me to go get neutered, and we'll just do it. But it didn't work out that way. So you're out there. And some of you have seen my physique. I'm a well-rounded guy and pretty stout, and, you know. But a great many of the people are very, a lot of ladies and a lot of older people are out there working to do what's good. They're having to work against the stream. They're having to work against an agency that is time and time and time again putting obstacles in their path. Then they oppose the bill. Doesn't make sense. So I would trap this animal if I'm lucky enough to trap him. So I have to buy the trap, or I could pay them $100. At one time it was $50 to leave my ID to get a trap, and there's a waiting list. And yet they're opposing a bill to prevent euthanasia. But on the other flip side of that, they're raising their prices to lease a trap or rent a trap. And then, so I go and I trap this animal. So now what do? I take this animal to the Humane Society. Well, just recently I experienced where you can take them in at 10 at night. See, so if I trap this cat at 5 in the evening, I got to hold this cat until I can take him down there. So if I'm trapping in Mililani, I got to spend my dollar, my time, and get in my Cadillac and drive on down to Humane Society and stand there and wait until 10 p.m. so that I can let the animal off and have him neutered. Then I got to return and come back and pick him up. And there are you can be penalized if you come late or what have you. Does that sound like an agency that is encouraging the reduction in population of animals? Speaking out against Bill 57, and while I'm not discussing Bill 57 and its all of its workings, I'm saying on face value, something is rotten in Denmark, and you, as donors and others out there, should ask the question of Pam Burns and that board, why is it that anything good comes up, you oppose it? Why is it that others like Alicia Malil Fiti, that's the lady who was able to submit a request and try and get a grant, I don't know the status of it, for a mobile vehicle, close to some $400,000. So imagine what $400,000 would do to help that army of people that are out there struggling to pay $25 a cat to neuter to reduce the population so that they wouldn't be euthanized. And we can, through attrition and through trap neuter release, reduce the population of cats. But no, They, in turn, here is Alicia Malofiti. My name is Alicia Malofiti, and I am president of Poi Dogs and Popoki, a local nonprofit animal welfare organization working to improve the quality of life of pets and their people. I am also the former director of the community relations for the Hawaiian Humane Society. Again, here's another person opposing a bill that's, what? Work with the Humane Society or have some relationship with them. So my question in all of this is, Bill 57 should move right along. I hope that they look at it and become more aggressive and hit the final points to make it work and drag the Humane Society, whether they're kicking and screaming. And remember, this is a year of giving. I would look to others, and I'm advocating this, and you can call your lawyers and sue me or do whatever you do in this process, but until you come to terms with this and start to do what's right and to oppose the reduction of euthanasia is just absolutely crazy and insensitive, and it's not humane, because in this society we are humane, but in that society there's too many obstacles. So anyway, real quick, caller, you have a comment or question?
Yeah, Carol, I just want to let you know that I have a friend that is a passionate cat lover, and she has spayed, you know, neutered cats,
mm-hmm.
and she lives in Kaneohe, and I told her what happens when she's elderly, and she feeds the cats near to my house, and there's about maybe 20 cats that have been neutered and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, who's going to take over when you pass away? She said her daughter will continue the legacy of feeding these cats.
And yeah. Well, if they weren't out there, what I've seen recently, I'm informed that, for example, the Humane Society goes to a cat person that is out trapping and feeding and neutering, threatening them with arrest and harassment. So something needs to give here, and it's not going to change unless the Humane Society is, their feet are brought to the, and they're brought to the table and their feet held to the fire on this. Okay.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you. But anyway, guys, do what you want to with your money, but don't fall victim to these cute, you go to Petco or whatever, and there's a Humane Society, and they're talking about the adoption of dogs, and they got a cute German Shepherd. But let's look beyond the dog blanket. Let's peel the dog blanket back and see what's really going on. I was instrumental when I was shocked that in this city, that in the laws, it was written that only the Humane Society could legally get contracts at one time. And I approached the city council, and they changed that. Who would ever think that you, one company or one nonprofit, could be guaranteed that they only get the work? So this is about competition and ridding yourself of those, and there's retaliation. So I ask that you be careful in the coming weeks, months, years when you donate or leaving money. Look to some of the other struggling organizations that really, really do hard work. And I mean, they do a lot of work. And I think we should see the reduction. Killing animals because of human problems, because we get a new job. Imagine, you get transferred and you can't afford to take them. So, boop, you're dead. So we got to change that. All right, I'll talk to you next week, and thank you for joining me. Aloha.
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu. And Israel.